Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Palace Way podcast. This is Pat at CFC Tampa coming at you with my co-host Bruno and our guest Bobby Manzi. Bobby, somebody who can now say is friends with Fabrizio Romano. How we doing, Bobby?
I wouldn't quite say friends, but yes, doing well. Been a busy couple of weeks on the Palace front, and I think it's going to get even busier going into the next 2 weeks.
For those of you that may not be aware, Mr. Romano happened to tag Bobby in one of his posts about Eze, something that we'll go into in a little bit more detail later on. Bruno, how are we?
I am fantastic. How are you, Pat?
I'm doing all right. I'm doing all right. Literally, it's quite sunny here in Tampa, but over on the other side of the Atlantic Ocean in Southeast London, it is not quite so sunny. It's a little bit of some storm clouds involving our Eagles. So Bruno, what do you got on the Brentford match? Obviously a 2-1 defeat, not the way that we wanted it to go, but what are some of your really quick takeaways from that match before we get into more detail?
It's disappointing, but it's not like concerning yet. I think a lot of the problems that people saw in that game can be attributed to a lack of fitness and a lack of familiarity. Both with the new players, so Kamada in particular, but also a Lisseless system, in that we don't have a left-footed inverted winger in that right attacking midfield role. I wasn't particularly concerned by any individual performances. I didn't think we learned anything we didn't already know. It's just unlucky, obviously, with the refereeing and the way the game kind of went. But I'm not overly concerned based off that performance that we're in a different place as to where we were a week ago. It's just upsetting that we don't have more than 0 points on the first after the first day of the Premier League season.
I'd have to agree with you. And to your point, for those of you that may not be aware of this, because I thought this was pretty jarring when I did the math on it. Out of our starting 11 yesterday, eight out of our starting 11 were involved in either Euros, Copa America, or the Olympics this summer. The only three that were not were Tyrick Mitchell, Will Hughes, and Daichi Kamada. So you're talking about 8 of 11 players being out in international competition, being away from training camp, with some new turnover with players, having to replace Elise. There's a lot of opportunities there to mesh and gel and build chemistry that most of our guys did not have the opportunity to do. So especially at a club like Palace, who, let's face it, we're not quite used to having that many international players go out and get to these big tournaments. It's something that we're not quite used to. It's something that we're going to have to adjust to. And I think, to your point, that's exactly what we saw on Sunday against Brentford. We had just a lack of communication, a lack of chemistry, a lack of physicality. And I think that can kind of be chalked back to just not having the time together on the pitch. Bobby, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I wrote quite a strong piece after the game on Sunday. And for me, I just thought Palace were very inefficient in everything they did. I think a lot of that can be attributed to the manager. Now, I said in a tweet after the game, phenomenal manager. Palace are lucky to have him. But when things don't quite go wrong, when things don't go quite right, that doesn't mean he's not exempt from criticism. And I think there's a few decisions you have to look at that he got wrong. I think leaving Hughes on the pitch for as long as he did was a mistake. I think putting IU through the middle when Edouard was doing a good job there was a mistake. I think starting Mateta when he was clearly tired was a mistake. I think not picking up on the fact that Mbeumo and Wissa were destroying the back three and not leaving them, bringing one of the fullbacks back to provide a bit more cover was a mistake. I think letting Anderson roam so freely in an attack was a mistake. So I think there were quite a few issues with Palace's performance. Now, I don't think Palace were awful by any stretch of the imagination. I think there were some signs of promise. But as an individual performance, and that's what I'm looking at, I'm not looking at it as a performance that defines the rest of Palace's season, but that isolated performance alone wasn't good enough.
And Bruno, do you think that perhaps some of these performances were due to some premeditated minutes limits, substitutions that were already decided before the match? Looking at Mateta coming out at halftime after being in the Olympics, looking at Wharton coming out after around 70 minutes or so. And of course, Do you think that anything like that had to do with the outcome of the match? Do you think that for me, sometimes it felt like it was almost still a preseason friendly with how the substitutions were going. So I'm just trying to get your thoughts on that.
I think the whole game had the general feeling of a pre-season friendly from the Palace camp. I thought Brentford approached it like a Premier League game, and I thought we approached it a little too casually, both in the sort of personnel and changes made. I think you're right in that Hugh staying on the pitch for so long was more of a case of the need to get Wharton off sooner due to his lack of fitness, which Glasner spoke about in his pre-match press conference, saying he was getting there but was, behind a week ago due to his involvement with the England camp. I think Eze playing for so long, given how recently he returned, is proof that we were trying to chase the game and weren't, pre-deciding substitutions, but it was clear it was affecting us. I think with Mateta, it's more of a case of we hoped he'd be fit, having played at the Olympics, and he just wasn't what we'd expected at all. I think it's likely they could have seen that coming on the training ground, and it was a let's hope for the best thing. We've seen this in the past from Palace managers. There are many, it happens in football. There are many cases of a player not being quite right, starting them and taking them off at a certain minute in time. Elise is a great example of that. It happened under Patrick Vieira at Newcastle away back in his first season, where Elise started the game and came off after about 35 minutes because he just simply didn't look fit. And I think this was the same kind of boat for JP. And it was the right decision to take him off, but it would have been an even better decision not to start him in the first place and to maybe bring him on with 20 to go if we're chasing the game.
Yeah, I agree. And for any manager in general, I think you have to be a little bit wary of what's going on with minutes and limiting them and not bringing anyone back too fast. We saw that with Elise last year, where he came on the pitch in a situation where he probably shouldn't have. So now we have Oliver Glasner and his extremely physically demanding system. I'm kind of okay with shying, erring on the side of caution, shying to being a little cautious with these guys, with giving them a little minutes, knowing that we have 37 matches left over. And of course, me being me, I wish this was true that I only started doing this for podcast reasons, but I've been taking notes while watching matches for far too long. It's a little embarrassing. Of course, let's run right into the match. One thing that I thought was immediately important, very interesting, was our shape. We talked a lot about, do we need a true winger? Do we need inverted wingers? Do we need a number 10 to fill those spots behind the striker? Right in the first 15 minutes, we saw a chance get created due to that relationism kind of aspect, where our Eze and Kamada pinched very close to Edouard, or to Mateta, excuse me. And Mateta received a pass. It was a nice progressive pass by Wharton or Anderson. I can't recall which one. And the defense for Brentford looked a little confused. They didn't know who really to mark. Everybody was kind of close to each other, and it left a lot of space open for Tyrick Mitchell down the left flank. Mateta found him, and it turned into a nice opportunity, and it gave us a corner. So I think that answered our question a little bit of, with Elise leaving, is our shape going to change? Overall, I thought our shape was pretty much the same, but let's talk about Kamada. Bobby, how do you think he did in his first start? Obviously, big shoes to fill with Michael Elise being gone.
Yeah, I think it was encouraging is probably the word to say. In spells, he showed really good ability on the ball. He was creative, and he showed his quality at times. He pressured the keeper into that monumental mistake, where Eze was then hacked down on the edge of the box. So yeah, I thought he was inventive at times, but he's still adjusting to the Premier League, and he needs to get up to the level of the Premier League. Obviously, he knows guys and systems, so that's an easy adjustment for him. But it's going to take time. But there were encouraging signs.
And Bruno, what about you? How did you feel he made in his debut?
Certainly not as bad as some people would have you think, based off the rhetoric I've been seeing online, which of course is a bubble. But I thought he was fine. I think he's the victim of his attributes as a player and the position he's playing, maybe a little bit. There's all this, you can talk about adapting to the Premier League, but he's an established player and there is an aspect of that. But you can see things in a performance. I don't think that was the biggest thing hurting him. I've spoken strongly on this podcast about the case for a left-footed player in that on that position. You know, Kamada was a left attacking midfielder in Eze's kind of position under Glasner before, and that was where he got a lot of good results. And it results in us playing more narrow, and Munoz having a little bit more isolation on that right hand side. And I think it means that with Kamada's profile as a final third player, he's less influential in build up. I think he gets involved, but it tends to be sort of shorter passes that don't do much. His sort of trademark is quick interplay with forwards, where he can open up a space and set someone up or make a run that opens up that space. And you kind of feel like you need another player in there at the moment to make that work. And I think with him drifting inside and an unfit Mateta, it's not fully working yet, but we are just a couple of weeks away from it working. I think Kamada can do a job in that role. I think he's an excellent player. And I'm not worried about anything I saw. I think give him a few weeks, as Bobby said, to adjust to the Premier League and for us to change our system a little bit more, because I think Munoz still has to get used to playing without Elise. And I think he can be an excellent player for us. I was really encouraged by his movement, by his vision, by his passes. I'd say the only thing I was less happy about, his pressing as well, which was fantastic. Only thing I was less happy about was his dribbling and sort of, he's just not that kind of player that can take someone on like Elise. And I think that's something we're really lacking, actually, because Eze's not going to get that space. It's going to be when, like, similar to when Wilf was getting sort of double, triple marked out of every game. We need another player in that 11 who's going to freak out defenders, because it opens up so much space, and Kamada's not going to freak out defenders on the ball. Off the ball, sure, but on the ball, no.
But the man who can take players on was left on the bench for far too long when things were going wrong. And I think that was an issue as well. But I thought the biggest problem with Kamada's performance was actually the players around him. Because when he created something, they just took far too long to shoot. They were trying to walk it into the net at times. And I actually think that contributed to people criticizing him because nothing was coming from the good he was doing because no one was able to get that shot away. Like I said, they were just trying to walk it into the net, all of them.
I don't know if it's just about shooting, though. It's also about general pace of attack. I felt like Kamada was the person who, when the ball got to him, made something transition from slow to quick in the attacking phase. But then it would get to Edouard and it would just be a loose touch and fall away. Or it would turn to Mateta and he'd hold on too long and it would go away. Or Eze
Yeah,
wouldn't
I
pass.
actually thought Edouard did really well when he came on. I thought Palace looked a lot better in attack. I thought certainly when he was playing through the middle, he held the ball up well. He looked threatening.
A footy fit Edouard or whatever he is now is still better than a completely out of shape Mateta, but it was still a lot weaker than what we were used to.
Yeah, but I think so. Like I say, he was holding the ball up well. I think his problem was when he got into the box, like the rest of the team, there was a drawback to shoot. He didn't shoot as often as he could have done. He had to take three or four touches, which is something we've seen a lot with Edouard. But I actually thought he did okay when he came on. I just think as an attacking unit as a whole, that Palace just were far too reluctant to shoot.
Yeah, I agree with you about Edouard. I think that he had a certain intangible, almost confidence in himself that we haven't seen very often. He looked more aggressive. He looked more content with trying to get on the ball. But yeah, the same kind of issues rang true where we continue to kind of hover over the ball, take one too many touches. And to that point, Kamada, I think, is best when he has fewer touches, when he's playing a one-touch pass, when he has a couple touches then passes it. He's not a guy that's going to take guys on. In fact, nobody on our squad was anybody that could take a player on yesterday, as they were 1 for 16 in attempted take-ons. 1 for 16.
Yeah,
So
but that's because their quickest attacker was left on the bench until the 84th minute. I mean, it didn't make any sense. It was crying out for someone with a bit of pace to come on and try and get some joy on the flanks. And Glasner didn't react. I do think it was a mistake from the manager. And I think we've got to be able to call these out because I still think fans are in the honeymoon period. And I think, like I said at the start of the episode, exceptional manager. But it doesn't make him exempt from criticism. And when things like that happen, when you've got someone like Ismaila Assar on the bench who can come on and change a game, you have to react earlier rather than. And I think the other one that frustrated me was fine if you're going to take Walton off, but Walton had been disguising the big issues from Will Hughes in midfield for the entire game. I thought Walton was brilliant again yesterday. if you take Walton off, you had to take Hughes off as well and change it to Decore and Lerma.
I would agree with that. I think that's a very good pairing as well. My only thing with Sarr, and I agree. I didn't want to see Jordan Ayew before Sarr.
He was shocking when he come on. I mean, he was just a waste of space.
Yeah, he had no impact on the game.
We have to remember it's match week one, right? So there is a chance that Sarr just hasn't been with training enough to have a good rapport with our guys, that Glasner didn't trust he was up to match fitness to come in at a certain time. And that's why he went with Ayew, because Ayew was with us for the entire preseason. There is a chance of that. Obviously, I'm not in the Palace training room.
But Sarr has had a full pre-season in France, and Glasner lobbied to get him to the club. Okay, Dougie has stalked him for 5 years, but Glasner was the one who said, this is the kind of player we need. Dougie then presents the player, and Glasner then goes, yeah, he's perfect for what we need. So he knows exactly what he was getting. He should have reacted earlier and brought that attacking player on because it's what Palace were missing.
What's strange to me is I think while we certainly needed Ismaila Sarr's pace, I think what we really needed was someone who can take a man on and cut inside. And that's something we lacked throughout the entire game. And it's something we're lacking in our squad at the moment because Brentford tore us apart in those situations. Brian Mbeumo ate Mark Gay for breakfast. Kevin Schade ate Chris Richards up. I've never seen Chris Richards have such a poor game in one-on-one situations for us. Those two
I
players.
actually never realized Chris Richards was as slow as he was until yesterday.
I've been saying it for weeks, and people were like,
I generally didn't think in 2024 we'd be saying that we missed Nathaniel Clyne's pace at the back. He got absolutely destroyed. He was awful. Now, I'm in the minority. I actually thought Anderson was Palace's best centre half yesterday. I thought he was shocking for the first goal. But in the second half as well, he saved two goals when Anderson and, sorry, when Guy and Richards were miles out of position, and he made last ditch tackles. But it was just all three centre halves were absolutely appalling yesterday.
They were not great, but I just want to. We'll get back to the centre backs, but I just want to talk a bit more about that profile of player that I feel we're missing. It's players like Sharda who can take a man on. We're missing someone who's got pace and technical ability. I'm not saying Sarr's not good on the ball, but I don't think Sarr's going to get at an angle to his man and, cut inside. He's just going to walk up to someone, then knock a ball past him and put a cross in or shoot. He's not. Really, he's not a maker, he's a finisher. You play a through ball into Sarr, he runs and he shoots. That's or he squares it. He's not the kind of player that's gonna take a man on, do a a drag back one way, a ball rock. He's just not that kind of player. And I think that's what we're really missing because we saw how effective it can be against any kind of subpar defender on a bad day.
And this is half the issue when you lose a player like Olise because he is irreplaceable. Now, even if you replace him with three attackers, you're still not going to get that exact same profile. But where he's got the pace, where he's got the finish, where he's got the emphatic skill to beat a man, you're not going to replace that pure quality. And actually, I think losing Olise, Palace have kind of changed the profile of attacker they've gone for because they've gone for one that suits Glasner's system more. But the issue is that you do lose that explosive nature of footballer.
I have a lot of reservations over that strategy we're using to quote unquote replace him. Because at the end of the day, you're still losing two-thirds of the player if you're using three players to replace him.
Yeah, I agree. But the question is how do you replace Michael Olise on Crystal Palace's budget? You don't.
See, you can't replace him. Yes, I agree. And Jezrin Rataki's not ready. And there are discussions to be had about, the money that we have. But look at the two players, and I know they're operating on a much bigger budget than us, but Yacouba Minte and the German signing that Brighton have brought in as well, the left footer, those are two brilliant examples of the kind of player that we would benefit from. Someone who would cost under £25 million, left footed player, good on the ball, quick, young, proven in Europe. That's exactly what we need. Pat, I know you're a fan of these players, so I think you can probably talk more about the need for that kind of profile than I can. But I just think if we'd spent on one player like that, plus Kamada, who can cover either side,
But they are still in the market for another attacker. But it's just.
which feels bloated to me, because then we're going to end up with Fransson not getting minutes. I know there is a doubt
But
over.
Francois isn't good enough to get minutes for what Palace want to achieve at the moment.
Well, at the moment, I don't think any of our transfer business indicates as to what we're trying to achieve, because we look uninspired.
I think that's a bit out of perspective, to be honest. I think Palace have done really good business. I think once you see one more player leave, whether that's Anderson, Guy, which one, who knows? But once you see one of those goes, I think Palace will be very active in the market going into the last couple of weeks. They want to bring in Lacroix, or Lacroix, however you say it. And he is a very good defender. I think he's exactly what Palace missed with that pace. Then they want to bring in Gosens on the left, and once again, it gives us another good option there. And they want to bring an attacker in, and it's whether the targets are clear. The targets are clear to me, and it's just whether they can execute those targets.
Do you think they can, given the way we've seen late windows handled in the past, namely the Sinisterra and Ekitike saga of last year?
Yeah, look, I think there is a world where they don't get an attacker. I do, but they're going to try and be busy. And like I say, if they can get that one out sorted, then I think there's room for business to be done. But at the minute, the numbers in the squad don't quite add up.
If I may offer a different perspective on the replacing Elise with multiple players thing to kind of maybe open your eyes to it a little bit, maybe offer a different paradigm so you can see it a little bit different. It's not about replacing players with multiple players. It's about sharing the responsibilities of what Elise was capable of doing across 2 to 3 players. So if you look at Elise, what was he great at? Of course, it was an extremely creative ability. That's something that we hope that Daichi Kamada can help with. That's something we hope that Eze can continue to grow with. You look at that carrying the ball from the beginning, the defensive third through the middle third up into the final third. That's something we hope Daniel Munoz can do. And if Daniel Munoz is going to do that, he needs his right center back to be able to shift to the right and almost play in a right back role. That's why, despite his age and his relative quality, Nathaniel Klein was great there last year. And that's why Richards has struggled there a little bit. Chris
Yeah,
Richards has struggled there a little bit because
I
he's
do
been
think Palace is.
not used to playing on that right side. And then you look at the defensive output. Daichi Kamada had more attempted tackles in the attacking third than any player for Crystal Palace against Brentford. His problem was he didn't win many of it because he wasn't as physical as Brentford was. That's not a Kamada problem. That was true across the board. We only won 44% of our duels. Under Glasner, we've won 51%. So if you spread these things out that Elise has, but we'll be okay. The one issue, though, is the one I haven't mentioned yet, and that's goals. I don't know who's gonna bring Elise's goals. I hope it's Kamada. Maybe Sarr adds up a little bit. Maybe we kind of moneyball this thing and we chip away at it. A few guys add in a couple different goals, but that's the one thing that's concerning. And at the end of the day, that's what wins and loses matches. So there is a little bit of concern there, but I do see what we're trying to do, and I do see the vision of what we're trying to accomplish, but a more proven goal scorer is going to be something that's very, very paramount for us going forward with Elise gone, and let's hope that we can make something of it.
I think it's really difficult to make these judgments until the transfer window is closed, and I think it's probably the best time to make it because at the minute we don't know how the squad is exactly going to look. But I don't necessarily have the big issue with goals. I think yesterday the biggest problem was a lack of understanding from the back three of what to do, and I think you picked up on it there with Munoz not being covered on the right. The back three didn't know what they were doing. I think that probably comes from not having the full pre-season, obviously being away on international duty. And I think that then caused attacking problems because last season, where Palace lost the ball in attack, quite often the defence would clean up and then the attack would go again straight away. Whereas yesterday, it was very easy for Brentford to get the turnover and then be straight in. Because Palace's shape at the back was all over the place. It was shambolic at times.
Yeah, and going off of that, I do agree with you. I thought Anderson was our best defender. I really did. And even the first goal, I know you alluded to kind of him being at fault. Go back and watch that goal. Yes, he marauded forward, but Wharton was back doing his thing covering for him. When Mbeumo got that ball, it was 4v4 in the box. It was man versus man.
Yeah, and then Mark's defending was then
Right.
embarrassing. He
Right.
just stood.
So I kind of appreciate Anderson kind of doing this thing going forward a little more, trying to create. There's going to be a little risks to it, but it seems like Wharton and with a guy like Lerma who can play center back and center midfield, with guys like that that kind of have the understanding of going back and covering. We've seen Gehi do this all the time when he was playing regularly before his injury. When he was even in a 4-3-3 or 4-4-2 or 4-5-1, he would always get forward and we'd have a central midfielder kind of dunk back. So I'm not opposed to Anderson doing that and kind of using his foot and using his creativity a little more to make up some of that stuff that Elise, has left us kind of empty with. But yeah, across the board, the chemistry just wasn't there. Munoz and Richards looked like two players that haven't really played on the same flank very often because they haven't, and it showed. So I think that we need a little more communication. But at the end of the day, I think that comes with more time. I think that comes with, more experience together. And we got 37 more of these things to shore that up. And I think we have reason to be confident with because our style of play across the board was fine. Our possession was fine. We had more touches in the opposing box than Brentford did on us. We had more shots. We had more shots on goal. We just have to improve the quality of these things and I think up our physicality a little bit. But all in all, I'm not too pessimistic about what happened. I think all these things can be fixed with good coaching and good time together.
Can I just touch on one more thing from the game
Absolutely.
That I totally forgot to speak about? The 10-minute spell from Doucouré at the end of the game, I thought he'd come on and did excellently. I thought he settled straight back into things really well after not playing since November. And I'm really excited, actually, for the fact that we could see a Walton and Doucouré midfield in a not-too-distant future.
Yeah, I think Doucouré does all of the dirty defensive work, off ball work that Hughes does, and is not quite as good of a passer as Wharton, but he's still pretty damn good. So,
Yeah, but it just allows Walton to be more advanced in that pivot, doesn't it? And
absolutely,
it
absolutely.
provides that extra insurance. I thought he was really good when he came on for 10 minutes, and like I say, excited about what he and Walton could produce throughout the season.
Absolutely, absolutely. I hate to be the cliche we say all the time, but him coming back from that injury is like a new signing. I know I'm groaning as I say that, but
Totally. I actually wrote it in the season preview. I said that if you look at Palace's midfield depth now, it's exceptional. It's probably the deepest midfield Palace have ever had in the Premier League. I mean, you've got the conundrum of having to leave Jefferson Lerma out because there's midfielders of higher quality that are now available. And I mean, Lerma was probably, or in my opinion, certainly Palace's player of the season last year.
I agree. I agree. I can't refute that whatsoever. And despite everything we've talked about, despite the disappointment, despite the things that we need to improve, we could have been up 1-0 early around the 25th minute or so. Eze seemingly robbed of one of the goals of the year by a faulty decision, an inadvertent early whistle by the referee. Bobby, what were your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, so when I was reviewing Palace's performance as a whole, as Glasner says in his press conferences quite often, I assess the things that Palace could control. And I made my assessment based on that. But I mean, the refereeing decision was absolutely appalling. I wrote in my piece, and I think it was quite strong, but it was probably right, that decision wouldn't look out of place in the Sunday League. I mean, it was just absolutely disgusting. I thought he was rash. He just picked his whistle up and blew it too early. If he would have given himself an extra second, then the ball would have hit the back of the net and he would have had time to then assess the decision. He wouldn't have taken VAR out of it completely. And there would have been a discussion to have had. And then if he still thinks it was a foul, fair enough. But to pick your whistle up and blow it because he got a bit excited was just absolutely shocking.
Yeah, and what your opinion of it is, or isn't, what we have to admit is that it changes the game. It changes the match completely. If you're 1-0 up there, you change your strategies. Brentford's going to try and go at the game a little more. We might be able to catch them out on the break. We might start to have the press play into our hands a little bit more there because we have the lead, just like we saw at the end of last season when we started to go 1-0 up and these teams started to get reeling a little bit. So.
Yeah, I agree totally. I think Palace would have gone 1-0 up, and I think it probably would have gone on to win the game. But just when you're assessing Palace's performance as a whole, they kind of lost their heads at that moment. Because they went on to concede 3 minutes later, and then Brentford had a few good chances. I mean, they should have scored straight after getting the first. But yeah, it would have been a totally different game. I do think Palace would have gone on to win. But It's one of them things. It's a shocking refereeing decision. He's apologized for it. It's hard to take, but at least he's admitted he's in the wrong. And I think that's good to see an official go and speak to the players after the game and say, I apologize, because I think that's needed in the game. But yeah, a frustrating one for Palace.
Yeah, and we'll wrap up the match here, as saying, you know, as we talked about, we're all three of us are a bit in agreement here that, you know, it was disappointing. Obviously, it's not the way you want the season to start, but 1 divided by 38 is roughly 3%. So we got 97% more of the season to go here, boys. More time to get ready and get used to things and get more acclimated to this system and get more chemistry. So all in all, I'm not too upset about it. Bruno, do you have any final thoughts on the match?
Yeah, just that I think post September international break, I think we'll find ourselves in a much better place. You know, we'll have our squad decided by then, which is something that, you know, remains unclear. We'll have our players more fit because there'll be more time to drill. Certainly those that aren't typical internationals and likely won't go out during that international break. I'm specifically talking about Jean-Philippe Mateta and Adam Wharton. I think they'll probably get a chance to train with the squad and get back to the levels that we'd expect from them. I'm confident that I think it'll be a really tough start to the season. I'm kind of expecting us to draw to West Ham, then lose to Chelsea, and it get a bit doom and gloom. And then we'll have a decent end of window and probably kick on from there. But I'm not optimistic about us doing too hot next week either.
And history kind of shows that as well. You look at the last three stints that Glasner was at, last four, if you include last spring with Palace, all four have had very slow starts. You know, talking his time at Palace last spring, talking his time at Frankfurt, and his last season at Wolfsburg. All four of them had abysmal starts, to be quite honest with you. And what happened right around that October international window for the three teams in Germany, and right after a run of maybe six or seven on, you know, games where we were trying to get on our feet with Palace, we went on these huge runs of form, racking up 3 points left and right. So there is a historical precedent that it's going to get a little worse before it gets better. And if that's the case, just have confidence. We've talked about it this whole podcast. This guy's a great manager. It's very easy to see. Have faith that he knows what he's doing. Have confidence in his system. And I think we'll be doing some great things here in the upcoming months of this season, hopefully down that.
I also think just last point on it was that I think the transfer window is really unhelpful. And for me personally, I think it should be closed at the start of the season because I just think it leads to an unsettled squad. And I think there's a few players there that don't really know if they're going to be here come 3 weeks or what is it, 2 weeks' time now, even. Obviously, Mark, Yoa, Schlupp. IU, you know, Sam Johnson on the bench. There's a lot of unknowns, and Palace's squad is still incomplete. So I personally think that if you close the window before the start of the season, everyone gets their business done, and you know what the outlook is, because everything's just a whole load of uncertainty at the minute.
Bobby, the consummate professional, throwing that wonderful segue in as we start to talk about the end of the transfer window here. So, Bobby, we're going to let you kind of take the lead here, and we're going to work off you with this one because we know that you're the expert in this field. Let's talk about these potential incomings and outgoings for Palace. I don't know if you want to, maybe we can start at the back of the pitch and move forward. If you want to talk about John Stone and goal, talk about the defensive back line, incomings, outgoings. Take the floor from here and just kind of give us what you know, and we can talk about some of the players.
Yeah, so it's no secret that Sam Johnson has handed a transfer request in. So he's one that you need to keep an eye on going into the last couple of weeks of the window. Wants to move away, wants to play regular football, was obviously stripped of the number one shirt. So yeah, he's certainly one that they're looking to find a club for and will listen to offers for. That obviously means a replacement is necessary. Now, there's a couple of names out there. One of the targets looks close to joining another club, so that could cause a slight problem. Then obviously it's no secret, and Glasner's made no secret of this, that he wants left wing back to strengthen his squad. He said it on Sky the other day that he's looking for a left wing back. Obviously, I understand that to be Gosens, but the interest is really early and there's still work to do. A club official did go abroad last week for a few days to speak to his agent and the club. So one to keep an eye on there. Centre half. I mean, it's Lacroix, Lacroix, however I'm going to say it. I'm sure it will be come clear to me over the next couple of weeks. Will be the replacement for either Anderson or Gueye if they leave. Obviously, he went down injured last. Well, no, it's tonight, but whenever you're listening to it, it's probably last night, whatever. So maybe a little bit of uncertainty there. Connor Sue from Bayer Leverkusen's another one they're looking at. Trevor Chalobah as well. And then you move forwards into the attacking section of the pitch, and they want another attacker. I mean, in an ideal world, they get a striker too, but it just leaves far too much to do left in the window.
Yeah, so let's kind of break these down. Bruno, I know you and I are both fans of Kasunu for Bayer Leverkusen. A strong, tall, fairly agile, pacey back for his size, capable of playing that right center back role and sliding, very comfortable sliding into almost a back four right back when Frimpong or whoever's in front of him is getting forward. Something that we talked earlier about how we struggled a little bit against Brentford. Finding someone that could do that role, Richard seemed to struggle. Do you have any thoughts on a player like him versus a player like Lacroix or anybody else in that back line?
I think Kasun is probably the most natural fit for a blank slate Glasner system. You know, the fact he's used to Frimpong, Munoz, in terms of how high he plays up the pitch, isn't dissimilar. He's able to slot into a sort of back four. He's tall, he's strong, he's quick. He kind of covers all of the bases that we're struggling in at the moment, which is also quite a nice thing. He is quite fast, obviously, Lacroix is as well, and is notoriously known for his pace. So I think you get that from both. You get height from both, you get strength from both, you get quality on the ball from both. I think it probably comes down to a couple of things at this point, being finances and obviously health as well. I want to bring you in on this, Pat. Obviously, we don't know the details of Lacroix's injury that he picked up in that cup game, but there's been general talk of a foot injury. Is there any input that you could provide as a former sports scientist?
Yeah, so the not get too long-winded here. Foot injuries can be extremely aggravating in how long they take to recover. Without knowing what's going on with it, I can't really tell you how long he's going to be out for, but I can say that there are certain injuries. If you get a midfoot sprain, if you get like a Lisfranc injury, that can be a very serious thing. But if you know, just the kind of logical layman's terms, you're always on your feet. Your feet are very weight loading. They have to be load bearing because, you know, you're walking and all your body weight is on them. So if you have a little tweak to it, because there's so much pressure, because it has to sustain so much weight, it can take a while to come back from. So we'll hope he's okay if he is a player that we're really targeting. But it could be a while. It could be nothing. We'll have to wait until more reports come out. And as Bobby alluded to when we were talking earlier, sometimes these things get lost in translation a little bit also. So maybe it's something less serious than we think. Or the opposite. Going back to Kasunu, I think that something we saw in the Brentford match would make me confident to have him in our back line. Right around I got in my notes here, the 66th minute, Munoz really pressed high. He tried to get the ball back on a counter press. I mean, he was above Eze, above Edouard, and he wasn't successful in it. Instead of getting caught out in this, you know, huge counterattack situation, we went to a true back four. I mean, when I say a true back four, I mean a very true drilled back four where Richard slid out to right back and Mitchell slid back into his formerly familiar left back position. Anyone that's watched Bayer Leverkusen under Xabi Alonso will know that that's a very familiar thing that they do. And I think that having someone like Kasunu would be really, really nice to have, really important to have for us. Not that I would be against Lacroix, I think he's a great player as well, but just kind of ironic that we did see for the first time Glasner kind of dump into this true back four and not this kind of pseudo making up for a player covering for a player. I think that's something that could be interesting with us going forward. I'll ask this to Bobby. Bobby, in your opinion, let me ask it two ways. Who do you think is more likely to leave out of Gueye or Anderson? And then, in your personal opinion, who would you rather see leave? Who do you think would be the easier one to replace?
Well, as of this morning, it was Gahey who's the more likely to leave. Who's the more easy, who's the easier one to replace? It's a good question. That's a really good question. I think Palace are reliant on Anderson's balls at times, so he's difficult to replace in that sense. And Gehi, I mean, he's an exceptional defender, all right. He didn't show it on Sunday, but 9 times out of 10, he gives you at least a 7 out of 10 every week. So that's actually a really difficult question. I'm not sure I've necessarily got the answer for it.
I think with Anderson, you're right in highlighting his passing. It's such a key part of the way we play, and especially under Glasner, I think he seemed especially keen on utilizing his long passes. It did not come off for us at all. You know, against Brentford, we were trying to win the long ball constantly against huge centre backs with a shorter striker in that position, with Odson Edouard not renowned for his aerial prowess. JP certainly looked less combative in the air as well than what we've typically seen from him recently. So I think for Glasner's system and the way he plays, which is a bit more direct, a bit more longer, long ball based, replacing Joachim Andersen is the difficult part because he's the centre of that defence. He's, you know, he was the captain for our run of games last year that we played so well in. So I think Mark Gay's probably, if I'm entirely honest, and it hurts me because I love him, the easier player to replace. Because for an Oliver Glasner system, I don't think Mark Gay necessarily is the player we need, as much as we need a player kind of like Kossounou or like Lacroix on that right hand side, because Richards can't do it. Whilst Richards or Riyad certainly can play on that left side, and I've got a lot of confidence in both of them to play that role. And I think the gain we get from someone like Kossounou or Lacroix on the right, and them on the left, kind of money ball would by a percentage point put us ahead of what we have at the moment. And for that reason, that I think Gehi would be an easier loss than Anderson.
Yeah, I buy that logic.
I think if I had to choose, I would say the same thing. I greatly appreciate both players, but I think there's a Anderson has a little bit of a unicorn element to him where his skill set's a little more rare and harder to replace. Not that Gay—he's easy to replace either. He's a excellent, excellent, excellent central defender, and he's much 4 or 5 years younger, I believe, as well. But I think that Andersons are a little bit more rare. And to your point on that, Bruno, the long balls in that match, Palace converted, I believe, 45% of their long balls to Brentford's 67%. So across the board, just something that we really need to work on is if we're going to try and be more physical, we need to get more physical. And if not, we need to start to figure out a little bit more of a plan B and a plan C
We
because
haven't scored a corner in a year and a half, Pat. It's obvious that aerials aren't something we excel in. And seeing Daniel Munoz taking corners when he's one of our best players in the air was
stopwatch.
baffling to me. Like, I know we all have a lot of respect for Glasner. There are some questionable tactical choices in there that if we'd seen Roy Hodgson making them, he would have gotten a lot more flack than he's gotten now. And that's not to say, you know, I'm not implying that Glasner's not earned the right to not be questioned or whatever. I just think there were some really strange decisions in there. If we're playing those long balls, what you ideally want to see is Lerma, Munoz, and Mateta getting in those positions, with Munoz able to win it out wide, Lerma on the secondary, and Mateta up top. That's the ideal kind of trio of players, and you're pinging them out sort of center to right, from goal or from defense. Unfortunately, we didn't have the fit players to kind of do that. And also with Munoz so isolated out there, with Kamada coming inside so much, if he wins that header and he doesn't control it himself and he just heads it away from him, it's going to go straight back to Brentford if there's not a player nearby, because Richards wasn't pushing up because he's not Klein, and Kamada wasn't coming wide because he's not Elise. So he ended up really isolated in those situations. I think if we want to play that kind of long pass based off Anderson, we need to support the players that are going to be receiving it, and we need to have the right players receiving it to fit that style. And that's kind of my fundamental issue with someone like Odson Edouard in that system, and with Will Hughes, for example, because he's not got the pace to step in and win that ball either. So I don't know. I kind of think this is a bit of a irrelevant segue, but it kind of makes sense. And that's that Hughes, Richards, and Kamada aren't going to work if we're playing that kind of system with the players we have at the moment.
I agree. And I think that's a fair point to make. And there is, again, there's some precedent of Glasner trying to tweak some things in the beginning of the season. He played a 4-2-3-1 in one of his years with Frankfurt when he was trying to fit Götze in with Kamada, and Kamada played left wing. And let me tell you, he didn't look great there. And he soon figured out that he needed to play elsewhere. But he's not opposed to tweaking things. I love Lerma. I love Lerma, but I don't know how you play him with Doucouré and Wharton. So maybe there's a situation where they go into a 5-3-2 and we put Eze behind Mateta and another striker. Who knows? It might be something that we see. Just Glasner's been known to kind of experiment with these things. So, like you said, we can kind of attest that it didn't really work that well on Sunday against Brentford. So maybe we try a couple other things and see what happens with it.
I think it kind of called out to me the need for a different profile of striker. Because I know we've spoken about the players that we're linked with and the positions we're looking for, which are replacement goalkeeper, centre back, another forward, and a left wing back. But for me, we're really crying out for a player different to Odson Edouard to deputise for Jean-Philippe Mateta. And I think it's kind of the boiling of the frog, if you know that sort of analogy, you know, like you're in a pot and it's just getting hotter and hotter, and you're not realizing that you're getting burnt to death until it's too late. I think that kind of creeping normality issue is really the case with Odson Edouard, because he's a serviceable lower Premier League at best striker that can score goals and can do a job. But, you know, and he is trying. You can see he's getting kind of more stronger. He is actually trying to hold up the ball, and it's better. And I appreciated that against Brentford. He just isn't right for that system, because he's not going to win the balls in the air. He's a bit, this is not the right phrase to use, but he's a bit of a pussy on the ball sometimes. You know, he doesn't quite get as stuck in as he should. He kind of dilly-dallies. He takes too long. He doesn't have a refined cutting edge factor to him that you really want him to have. And I think we're just lacking a quicker player, a stronger player, and someone who can actually kind of shoot with power. Because Edouard just kind of tries to pass the ball every time. You very rarely see him blast it. The only time I have seen him do that was Fulham away in 22, 23. He had a shot from the edge of the box, which went nowhere. He had another one on his left, which was equally disappointing. You know, he's employed to be a finisher, and he doesn't really demonstrate it. And yeah, he was unlucky for the offside, but I think he could have at least tried to time it a little bit better. And it was so predictable when I saw it as well. Like, as someone that plays as a striker, all you're thinking about in that situation is don't be offside, because you know you'll score it if you're in. And he's failed at that fundamental part of scoring that goal. Yet again, yes, it's unlucky. Yes, the pass comes late, but I just don't think he's the right player to take us forward. And if we're not thinking about replacing him as a backup striker, I don't like that approach. I know we've got more pressing issues around the squad, but we've had time. We've made no buys for the last 3 weeks. We could have absolutely bought someone preemptively. We know his contract's up at the end of the year. We know there are some clubs interested, although it's dubious who would even want Odson Edouard for the fees and wages that would be involved. But to conclude that slightly rambly monologue, I want to know if I'm alone in my thoughts on doubting Odson Edouard and wanting to move him on and bring in a different, more physical profile of player.
I'm chuckling to myself over here because I still have this screenshot saved from my text message when we first signed Edouard. I used that exact same not so nice term to describe his physical play when I watched him at Celtic. So maybe not much has changed there. I agree. I think there's a player in him, but I think you need to really build a team around and cater your playing style to him. And quite frankly, at our level that we want to aspire for, I don't think that his quality is worth necessitating a change in system to cater around him. I think he's working hard, but I'd like to see him go somewhere. And like I said, he's a pretty good player himself. I think he could have success somewhere else, and that would be good for his confidence, good for him. So I think it could be an amicable break. Just throwing this out there, a certain 6'5"
striker from the Swiss League has 5 goals in his first 3 matches. I'm just going to say, let's go get Tierno Berry. Let's just go sign him. Let's will that into the atmosphere right now. Let's will it into existence, because he has a profile that I think would be great. Every player that I fall in love with this summer and last summer is signing to somewhere else. Marjic just signed with Atalanta. He's going to absolutely light it up there. I'm heartbroken a little bit with those things. So it is what it is.
I know I've spoken a lot about Barry, and obviously we broke the initial story about the interest in him. I have my own reservations solely because I think he's a little bit discombobulated and clunky. I don't think he's quite filled out the way he can yet. I think he's still got a bit of the early days JP to him. I think he can scuff a shot in front of goal a couple of times. So I was watching him this week for Basel. He is an exciting young forward, but I don't think he's actually Premier League quality yet.
Not yet. He's like I said, he's baby JP.
He's baby JP, just like Georgia Lekena, who's just moved to Monaco, who I also really, really like, and is left-footed and a little bit more balanced because he's a bit shorter. I'd love that kind of profile of player. Honestly, I'm not against Eddie Nketiah, even though it looks like he's going elsewhere. I just think we need someone who can do a bit of it themselves. I think Eddie can't score goals unless he's given service.
Yep.
I think we need someone who can either hold up play or run, take it wide and wait for other people. I don't care what. Just do something and not lose the ball, because the amount of times Odson Edouard loses the ball and then doesn't score enough goals to make up for it is embarrassing. Like, I love the guy. I really do. I was so excited when we signed him, and I was on the Edouard hype train. Obviously, he had a fantastic debut, but he's not right anymore, and we need someone who, it doesn't need to be a Mateta, like for like player either. Obviously, that's what Barry's kind of closer to, as you said. But I'd be fine with like a Hatsan Daka profile player. I don't think he's actually good enough, but like, I just need someone with either something different or an ability to go solo a little bit. I think Nketiah definitely has that latter one. I don't think Nketiah is a certain, you know, has a standout trait, a unicorn sort of, as you said, thing to him. But that's what I'd want. Someone who's either got something special in one area about them or someone who can do the JP job, basically.
Yeah, and like you said, to just add those goals. I mean, we talked about it. We need somebody to take that role from Elise, and not all his goals need to go to one person, but, you know, at a certain point, we need to account for those goals that he scored, and who better than a striker to do that? So, Bobby, I wanted to wrap up a little bit with these transfers to touch base on two players that there's been a lot of rumors on, but could be just kind of speculation, low-hanging fruit, because there's some connections with the club or connections with Glasner. So those two would be Kostic, the left wing back that played with Glasner at Frankfurt. And the other one would be Ryan Cherki from Lyon, who obviously same ownership group there with John Texter. Are there anything to those two, or are those just kind of lazy journalism kind of linking players that maybe seem like they'd be good for us?
Kostic isn't one I've heard. Obviously, I've seen the rumours. It's not one I've heard. It doesn't mean it's not true, but it's certainly not one that has been fed to me. Ryan Cherki, I mean, I think a couple of years ago, or was it maybe a year ago? I can't remember. Last summer, possibly, or possibly the January before that, the Palace were sniffing around. He's certainly a player that the club have admired, but I don't think it's one they'll look to do. I think it's agent talk, really, trying to get him a move.
Yeah, that seemed to be what I've always speculated it would have been too. Just kind of sometimes when it's too simple and too good to be true, it usually is. So, is anything else we want to add up with the transfer talks? Anything outgoings that we may not have touched base on? IU, Schlupp, are these guys likely to head out, or do you think they'll probably be Palace players once September hits?
Look, I think in an ideal world, one of them, or at least one of them, will leave the club. But I just think Palace have got a lot to do going into the end of the window, and I'm not sure they'll be able to get it all done. So there could be a world where both players stick around. But obviously, Schlupp was an unused substitute on Sunday, wasn't he? IU come on for whatever it was, his 15-minute spell. But yeah, look, The club were looking for moves for both of them. Celtic put in an offer for Schlupp, and IU's had interest from Leicester. So we'll wait and see on that front.
And then possibly the most important or one of the biggest transfer news for Palace in the last few days here is not a transfer at all, but a contract situation. Iberia Eze, Bobby, you reported yourself that his release clause has now expired. So that 60 million no longer is eligible to be triggered. I just want you to touch base on that and talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so Eberechi Eze had a £70 million release clause in his contract. At 5 p.m. on the evening of the start of the season, that expired, which essentially means now nobody can activate that for the rest of the season. And that's a good bargaining tool for Palace, because that means if Manchester City want to come in, then they're going to have to produce nine figures to get him to leave the club. It just provides the extra layer of security for Palace, Glasner and Steve Parrish, knowing that their star man will likely be a Crystal Palace player come the end of the transfer window.
Yeah, a great timing with that too, with Oscar Bob's injury possibly being out till January. City might be a little desperate for some attacking talent, so pretty nice to have that expire right there. Is that something?
City have got a bit of liquidity and cash now as well, with obviously Alvarez going to Atletico Madrid. So it's certainly one that I saw on my social feed of fans getting a bit panicky. I mean, I wasn't expecting City to come in anyway, but certainly if they wanted to, then now that just provides that extra layer of security that Palace can demand anything and everything for the player.
Excellent, excellent. And thank you always with your expertise on these. We love hearing from you. You know, we know that social media sometimes can be just a whirlpool of rumors and conjecture. So having somebody with a little bit of connections and somebody that can speak with accuracy, we really appreciate you coming on and talking with us. Bruno, any last words?
Just that I'm optimistic still about the season. I don't think we should walk away from Brentford and go, well, that's it. You know, we're resigning ourselves to finishing below 10th again, because we had a fucking awful start of the season and general season until Glasner came in last year, and we still came 10th. So that kind of tells you how bad you need to be to really lock yourselves down there when you have a team as good as ours. I think without Elise, there'll still be a drop off, but the general improvement in manager and squad depth over the course of the season will see us improve on our finish last year. So I'm still optimistic, as I said at the start of the podcast. There's a lot to look forward to. The weeks are going to be slow between games, either because we're desperate to see us win or because we can't wait to see us play again. Either way, I think being a Palace fan is going to be a good thing this year for the first time in a while.
Yeah, and if I may, my little final input here for any local Tampa Bay people. If you live close to Tampa, you live in St. Pete, Tampa, Clearwater, if you're willing to drive from Orlando, Fort Myers, I don't know how daring you are. We're really trying to build this thing out locally. We're trying to build off the backs of this nice tour we had here. We had an excellent time. And there's no better way to watch Palace than with like-minded people that are also supporting that team wearing the famous red and blue stripes. So if you are somebody in this local area to me in Tampa Bay and you want to get involved, you want to join our supporters group, you want to know where to meet, please, I'm trying to put a group together for all of us. Message me, follow me at CPFC_Tampa. We're going to put a group together. It's going to be a great time. Like I said, I think the more the merrier. I think, you know, I've been watching Palace by myself for quite a long time. I'm finally starting to recruit people into it. It's a pretty big accomplishment for me. I'm pretty proud of it. And we'd love you to join if you're in the area. So message me if that's something that interests you. But I think we're going to have a great year. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think we're going to see more wins than losses. So no better time to become a Palace fan to take this thing seriously.
Well, that's the perfect jinx that everyone needed. Thanks for that.
Oh, we don't need any jinxes. Come on, this is Palace. You know how it's going to go anyway.
Saying we're going to get more wins than losses is definitely a jinx.
All right, we're going to draw more than we're going to win.
Yeah, that'll do.
Okay, there we go. Forget, you can cut that other one out. Bobby, any last words for you before we take off?
No, yeah, still room for optimism. Sunday was a blip. I'm sure Palace will improve. Yes, everyone's gone a bit strong on the analysis, but I also think that's healthy because there were problems with the performances. Onwards and upwards for Palace. West Ham and then Norwich in the cup, and that's quite a nice cup draw to get the cup run started, hopefully.
That's right, that's right. And don't forget to check us out on social medias at The Palace Way, thepalaceway.com, looking for full-length articles. We have a lot of articles from different members here talking about tactics, talking about transfer rumors, talking about the youth academy, which is something that I think, respectively, without bias, we do a great job with. So go ahead and check all of those things out for more information on Crystal Palace. For now, that's all we have. We'll see you next week after West Ham, hopefully a little bit in better spirits. That's all for now. Take care.